The following letter was written to Jonathan Edwards' friends in Scotland concerning the second visit of George Whitefield to Northampton, September 16th, 1745. Jonathan Edwards writes, "Mr. George Whitefield's late visit to New England has been an occasion of the whole country as being in a great uproar, but I think, wholly without any fault of his, or at least any fault committed by him in this visit. He came ashore at York, in the eastern part of New England, last year, 1744, October 26th, and immediately after his arrival was taken very ill, and had a sore fit of sickness in which he was brought near to death, but was wonderfully soon restored, so that he began to preach. Many ministers were more alarmed at his coming than they would have been by the arrival of a fleet from France. And they began soon to preach and write against him, to warn people to beware of him as a most dangerous person. Soon after his arrival, the ministers of Boston consulted together how they should treat him, and the greater part of them agreed to invite him to preach in their pulpits. But it presently upon it, the president, fellows, and professors of Cambridge College published a testimony against him, warning ministers and people to beware of him as an enthusiast, a censorian, an uncharitable person, and a deceiver of the people, and so on. Advertising ministers and their respective associations through the country to unite in testifying against him and warning their people against him. It is to be noticed that ministers throughout almost all parts of New England or want to meet in associations. But the associations on this province in New Hampshire are no part of a legal establishment, as they are in Connecticut, but only voluntary societies of ministers for mutual advice and assistance in ecclesiastic and religious affairs." There soon followed this letter from an association of ministers in the eastern parts to the ministers in Boston that was published, finding great fault with them for inviting Whitefield into their pulpits and earnestly testifying against Mr. Whitefield. After this, testimonies were exceedingly multiplied and accumulated against him from associations of ministers all over the country, and many other things written against him by particular persons. In these testimonies and writings, everything was gathered up to object against him that could by any means be found. Everyone strove to find something new that others had not said before them. Besides a great deal published in the Evening Post and in pamphlets by anonymous authors, wherein Mr. Whitefield was reproached in the most scurrilous and scandalous manner, without observing any measures or keeping within any bounds. And I question whether history affords any instance paralleled with this, as so much pains taken in writing to blacken a man's character and render him odious, and all for his old faults without anything new worth speaking of that they could find against him. For in this last visit he conducted himself much more modestly, wisely, and inoffensively than before. Many that when he was here before durst as soon eat fire as speak reproachfully of him, the regard of the people in general was so great to him, now have taken liberty of opposing him, most openly and without restraint. And many that before seemed to have a veneration for him, and spake highly of him in their prayers and sermons, have now appeared zealous against him. He continued in the country much longer than before, being more than 3/4 of a year after his arrival, before his departure. And all the while he stayed, the country was in a kind of constant alarm, as though he was working the country's ruin, and all without any cause. All that he did was only to preach the pure doctrines of the gospel to the people, applying them with proper earnestness, carefully avoiding meddling with their controversies, behaving himself with admirable meekness under all reproaches that were cast upon him, not justifying his former faults and humbly confessing some of them. But this did not at all abate the violence of his opposers. All the while he continued here, he was treated by many as though he was excepted from the common benefit of rules of truth, justice, and humanity. Though there was a great deal of difference among his opposers, some were much more violent and unjust than others, and doubtless many honest, pious, and upright people were drawn in to side with Mr. Whitfield's opposers, being blinded in the midst of the great dust that was raised. And some ministers that favored him at his arrival were at last overpowered by the multitudes of testimonies and the great name of the fame of the testifiers. And among all the testimonies that were published, none had so great influence as the large one published by Dr. Edward Wigglesworth, divinity professor at Cambridge, in the form of a letter to Mr. Whitfield, he being universally esteemed a very great man, and a Calvinist, and a man of a calm, moderate temper, and his testimony written with more moderation than many others, and with more show of good reason, though I am not far from thinking his testimony just. It has had great influence. But the great opposition made against Mr. Whitfield had a contrary effect with many than what was intended. It caused them to cleave the more closely to him, and greatly to pity him, and abhor the spirit and behavior of his opposers. For they looked upon him as persecuted for Christ and the gospel's sake. And many have hereby had their ill thoughts of the generality of the ministry greatly established in them. Mr. Whitfield wrote several things in his own vindication, and several others published apologies for him, the chief of which were those of Mr. Thomas Foxcroft of Boston, and Mr. William Hobby of Reading, and Mr. William Shirtleff of Portsmouth. But it signified little or nothing to endeavor to oppose and stop this dream that was so violent against him. These apologists were immediately run upon by a multitude, and were ridiculed and lampooned from the press by anonymous authors in a most scurrilous and vile manner. It was a kind of a miracle that Mr. Whitfield should appear so little moved by all that he met with, and should in the midst of all possess himself with so much courage and calmness and so on, though he spent the greatest part of his time while he was in the land in the midst of the hottest battles. He spent much time in Boston and in the parts northeast from Boston, but he visited almost every part of New England except in the western part of Connecticut. He, with his lady, was here at Northampton almost a week in July last and behaved himself so that he endeared himself much to me. He appeared in a more desirable temper of mind, and more solid and judicious in the thoughts and prudence in his conduct than when he was here before. He went from here into Connecticut, but it was so late in the year that he spent but little time there. What time he did spend there was mostly in the eastern parts of Connecticut, where he very boldly, plainly, and abundantly testified against the opinions and way of the wild and extravagant people there, and has there done a great deal of good. A considerable number have been reclaimed by him, but yet the big part are obstinate and condemn Mr. Whitfield, as they do other ministers that oppose them. He did not go into the western part of the Connecticut at all, but went out from Lyme, a town at the mouth of the Connecticut River, over to Long Island, the east end, I think about the beginning of August, and from there to the west end of the island, and there he went to New York, and from thence through the province of New Jersey to Philadelphia, intending to travel by land through all the provinces to Georgia. His manner was to preach every day, commonly twice a day, sometimes three times. His preaching was attended in New England with no such remarkable effects and awakenings and reviving religion as before. There were commonly great and crowded congregations where he preached, and he was heard with great attention, and many were affected, but no remarkable alteration has followed. The country in general remains in a great degree of stupidity as to any work of conviction on the hearts of sinners. I know of no such work going on anywhere in this land. It appears to me very probable that his preaching would have been of great use in many respects if his adversaries had let him alone, and ministers in general would freely have allowed him their pulpits, and that the consequence would not have been the promoting those errors and disorders that they pretended to fear and guard against, and making so great an alarm in the country about him. But that, on the contrary, in the temper he was in, it would have been very much tended to correct errors and heal breaches. But the manner of his opponents had been to appear full of heat, violence, and contention against him, and thereby to fill the church's towns and the whole country with contention and confusion, and to lay the strife and uproar to Mr. Whitfield and cry out, "See what a great flame Mr. Whitfield's coming has put the country into." And so they would condemn him as not fit to be born in human society for the greatness of the fire which they kindled and continued to their utmost to blow up. Whereas Mr. Whitfield in this visit seemed not inclined to do anybody any harm, some ministers that were more impartial had their hearts filled with fear concerning him from the abundance they heard and almost dreaded, lest he should come where they had to do, who when once they came to see and hear and converse with him, immediately changed their minds and had all their fears dissipated at once. Jonathan Edwards.